Hello and welcome to Biblical Breadcrumbs, and in this episode, we're kind of following up after last time dealing with that big question that Jesus gets asked. Lord, are only a few people going to be saved? Well, that's a little bit complicated. Are only a few people? Guess what? Jesus doesn't actually give the answer to us. He says instead, you work on it. It's not about who gets saved. It's not about how many get saved. It's about whether or not you're right with God and whether or not you're going to be saved. And the only way to do that, to make sure of that, is to go and work for it. That's why we're going to go ahead and go into chapter 14 today. And Jesus is addressing various things, but again, we're picking and choosing different aspects of him to focus on. One of the aspects that's really important to focus on is the cost of following Jesus. Because it's not free, right? Jesus commands that people follow him, but it's not going to be an easy road, and it's definitely not going to be comfortable. And that's where you come to Luke chapter 14, starting in verse 25 and running through the end of the chapter. Luke chapter 14, let's start reading in verse 25. Now great crowds were traveling with him, so he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, wanting to build a tower, doesn't first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, after he has laid the foundation and cannot finish it, all the onlookers will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This man started to build and wasn't able to finish.' Or what king going to war against another king will not first sit down and decide if he is able, with 10,000, to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If not, while the other is still far off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. In the same way, therefore, every one of you who does not renounce all his possessions cannot be my disciple. Now salt is good, but if salt should lose its taste, how will it be made salty? It isn't fit for the soil or for the manure pile. They throw it out. Let anyone who has ears listen." Now, Jesus, how do we express this in modern day terms? Jesus has no chill, right? Sometimes he is nice, and sometimes he's, you know, kind and gracious and understanding and gentle, primarily gentle, right? He has all of these attributes in him. Sometimes he is kind and gracious and not so gentle, right? And this is one of those times. Because it's not kindness to hide the truth. It's not graciousness to hide what's right and what's wrong. No, kindness and grace are displaying those things. But rather, he's changing his gentleness approach. Because sometimes he will do things gently, and sometimes he will do things a little rougher. Still loving, still truthful in either case, and yet this is one of those times in which Jesus sets aside his gentleness and his trying to like nurture faith in people, and this is one time where he just comes out and says and demands it. He demands the faith from people. It's not about gently growing the faith, and one day they'll grow up and they'll get to this point, and he's just going to help them through it one step at a time. Yes, Jesus does that. But that's not the only thing that he does. In fact, he comes out, and here he just kind of blasts people and hits them with three very upsetting statements. This is in an instance when a bunch of people are following Jesus. And it's curious, whenever a bunch of people start following Jesus, he always seems to turn around and give a message. In Matthew chapter 5, he sees the crowds, and so he sits down and he speaks the Sermon on the Mount to them. And I think it's John chapter 6. He sees a bunch of people following him. And rather than, you know, sitting down and giving the Sermon on the Mount, which is that gentle introduction into Christianity and what it's all about, he really just blasts them. And he says, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you can't follow me." And so they leave, right? Most of them leave because they don't want to hear it. Sometimes Jesus uses different tactics. And here's one of the examples, much more like the latter than the former. The great crowds are following him, and he turns around and says, "Look, are you really following me?" That's a question we need to ask. Yes, you say you're following me, but are you really following me? If anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own family, all of his family members, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. That's not he's going to have a hard time being his disciple. No, that is, you cannot. It is not possible. There is no way for you to be his disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross, verse 27, and come after me, cannot be my disciple. Verse 33, every one of you who does not renounce all his possessions cannot be my disciple. I preached a lesson on this one time, or maybe twice, I don't remember. I preached a lesson on this. I called it, you can't follow Jesus. You know, Christianity is full of people who want to say, you can follow Jesus. Because it's true, Jesus came down with his commands and his rules and his ideas, and he's expressing God's own will and God's own word to us. Jesus came down to say these things to us, right? Jesus came down to give us God's message, and there's an inbuilt expectation that you can follow Jesus, and you're supposed to follow Jesus, and that's the job. Here, Jesus is a little bit harsher than normal. And here he comes out and he says it like it is. And he says, you can't follow me if these things are true. There's an expectation then. The expectation is that you follow Jesus. The fact is, you cannot follow Jesus if these following statements apply. Therefore, what? Therefore, the answer is to make sure the following statements do not apply. And to make sure that you're living right with Jesus and right with God, you're wanting to do the right thing and the good thing and what Jesus says instead of doing something else. Great crowds are following him. He says, look, you guys cannot follow me unless, here are these three conditions. Here's what they are. You have to hate your family, right? Father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even yourself. You cannot be my disciple. A lot of people want to disguise what's going on here. A lot of people want to tone down what's going on here, and they talk about the idea of hate as, you know, loving something less. And so you gotta love God the most, and you can love your family too, but they're secondary. And that's true. And I think ultimately that is what Jesus is going for, but we miss the whole point of his point. If we don't recognize, he says hate. This is a message that's communicated via a reality called hyperbole in the English language, an idea by which someone overstates something to such a dramatic extent to kind of make an impression and to kind of shock other people and to make them kind of like do a double take. Wait, what is this person actually saying? Right? When you read the rest of the Bible, even when you read about Jesus, what does Jesus do? Jesus clearly doesn't hate his own family. He cares for his mother enough that when he's dying, he looks out for her well-being, and he gives her to John to take care of. John, it's your job to take care of my mother. That's what Jesus indicates in the Gospel of John, chapter like 18 or 19, wherever it is in there. It's clear that Jesus doesn't hate his mother literally. But what's he saying? He says, hey, you have to hate your family, right? You hear that statement, and your ears perk up, and you say, what in the world is going on there, right? And that makes you ask a question that wouldn't be asked otherwise. Think about if Jesus had phrased the question in this way. Think about if Jesus had just said, you've got to love God, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, even more than your family. That's a statement that everybody knows. Right? And that's a statement where everybody would kind of just nod along. Yeah, I agree with that. And that's great. That's great. I 100% agree. And then you just move on. And that's kind of all there is to it. That's all that comes when Jesus makes those statements, which he does. What is there for people to think about? They've heard all these things already. Instead, what Jesus comes in and says, hate your family. Whoa. Well, that's attention getting. Wait, what is Jesus saying? That's a wild thing to say. And then when you get through the shock, and when you actually evaluate his words, what is he communicating? He's communicating the very same message he has been communicating. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? Love God with everything you have. And after that, you love other people, including your family, right? He's expressing that same want and that same desire, but he's doing it by means of incredibly strong language to get your attention. A lot of us don't take this seriously. A lot of us, even people in the church, right, even people who have been Christians allegedly for a long time, are full of claiming that they obey Jesus and they follow him and they really love him and they love God and they do all these things for God. And yeah, that may be true. But then we don't take stuff like this seriously. And we try to explain it away. And we try to kind of like neuter it and make it not as impactful as it is. But guys, it is. Hate your family. Wow. What does that mean? A lot of people are going to hear that and immediately hand wave it away. No, Jesus said it. So think about what he means. It's about loving God. God doesn't take this lightly. I don't think God himself would have said, hate your family, if he didn't mean it. Right? It's not love God more than your family. It is hate your family and follow God. That's it. That's a statement. God takes this seriously. Do we take this that seriously? Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who, even though God says to love him more than family, they proclaim to love God, and they do genuinely love God, but they might not do it. They might not love God more than their family. And so even though they're partway there, what? They love God, but they love their family too, and they've got split loyalties. They can't be Jesus' disciple. Don't fall into that trap. Don't love your family too much. God commands you to love your family and to care for them and to take care of them and lead them well and teach them wisely and be a good influence for him, right? God commands all these things. But if you love them more than you love him, you've missed out. If there's a question of who you love more, you've missed out. Hate your family, love God. That's it. And once you're settled on that, once you're okay with the idea that I can hate my family and I'm going to love God instead, then you're going to listen to God more than anyone else. And what God says is you need to love your family because of me. Not because of who they are, not because of how they benefit you, not because of anything that they've done. You need to love your family because God made them too. Get your priorities straight. Y'all, this is not a joke. Okay, hate your family. That was a thing that Jesus said. Strong language. Don't brush that away. Hate your family. Love God. And God will ultimately come back around and tell you to love your family. But that comes second. You need to make sure who you're actually following and caring about. Secondly, if you don't bear your own cross and come after me, you cannot be Jesus' disciple. Bearing your cross is this idea in Roman times, an idea of total execution. The cross is not something that you come back from. The cross is just a plank of wood with a different plank of wood that's been, you know, nailed to it in some fashion or affixed to it. And then they pin somebody up there with railroad spikes through the wrists and ankles, and they just hang them there until they choke to death, until they suffocate because they can't breathe anymore. Well, that's lighthearted, isn't it? Well, that's a wonderful thing. I'm sure that just means I need to listen to Jesus and do what he says. So often we sanitize this language, and we dumb it down, and we dull it to the point that it doesn't mean anything anymore. We look at the cross, and we're like, oh, I understand that's a picture of sacrifice. That means I need to care about the things that Jesus cares about. And that's true, right? Is that not true? That is the basic gist that he's kind of getting at. But note the language he's using. He's using execution language. He's saying, essentially, and wonder if this gets taken off online stuff, he's saying to rid yourself from this world or rid the world of yourself. He's saying get rid of yourself, right? Take up your cross, a voluntary activity, and go to this place of execution and die there. If you don't do that, you cannot be a disciple of Jesus. What does that mean? Guys, it means a lot more radical things than we often think it does. A lot of times people claim to be disciples of Jesus, and what does that mean? That means we go to church on Sunday. That means we pray before each meal. That means sometimes we read the Bible or maybe even mention it to someone else, right? And those things are all well and good, and those things are all good behaviors. But if those things are just, you know, part of our normal life, is that really called killing ourselves for Jesus? Is that really what that is? If it's just tradition, if we're just kind of following it because that's what we're used to, we read the Bible because we're told we should, we pray because it's probably a good idea, we come to church because that's what we're used to on Sundays, what part of that is a self-execution that entirely rids yourself of yourself and opens you up for Jesus to come in and take over. Right? Jesus is not asking to have a bunch of people follow him in their spare time. Jesus is asking for 100% control of your life. He's not going to force himself on you. That's not how God works. God allows free will. He lets us all choose. And God expects us to use our free will back towards him in a goodwill manner. What are you going to do if you don't empty yourself of yourself? If you don't get rid of yourself and put Jesus in instead, then are you really his disciple? Galatians 2 and verse 20 is a very popular verse. Kind of, you might think of it in close proximity with this. There's an apostle, Paul, one of Jesus' followers later on, a very influential guy. And what does he say? He says, he expresses it in this way, I have been crucified with Christ. I've taken up my cross and I followed him to the grave. Nevertheless, it is not I who live, but it is Christ who lives in me. The life which I live in the flesh, I live it by faith in the Son of God. It's no longer about Paul. It's no longer what Paul's doing. It's what Jesus is doing through that person of Paul. Through the guy who used to live for his own wants and his own desires, that guy was called Paul. He's not the same anymore. Now he's met Jesus, and now he's different, and now he lives for Jesus. If we don't have this radical execution of self and welcoming of Jesus, are we really his disciple? Most people don't think of it in these terms. We sanitize it and we make it so much easier. Guys, it's not about finding out how many people are going to get into heaven. There's a reason Jesus says, strive to enter the kingdom, chapter 13 in verse 24. Make every effort to go through the narrow door. It's really, really hard to get there. Why? Because it requires stuff like this. Okay, hate your family. Or who wants to do that? Not me. But that's what's required. I need to love God. I need to go for God first. I need to go for God only. I need to live for God. I need to get rid of myself. It's not just hate my family, it's hate myself too. And get that out and get all those desires out. And now I don't live for the things I want to do. I live for God and I live for the things he wants me to do. Whoever doesn't hate his own family cannot be my disciple. Whoever doesn't take up his cross and execute himself, right, cannot be my disciple. Which of you, when you want to sit down and build a tower, how many of you just start building without taking into account the cost, right? How many of you, if you're going to expand a bit on your house, I don't have a house, but if you were hypothetically going to expand a section on your house, would you just start paying for like walls and stuff if you don't know that you can complete the whole building and have an actual extra room? No, you're not going to, because what's going to happen? You're going to make a room without a floor or a ceiling, run out of money, and then have not an extra room. You'll have some walls that then get rained on and get ruined, right? You have time to do something, right? And so you want to watch a movie. I have some movies I want to watch, but they're all like 2.5 or 3 hours long, and I have 2-hour-long time slots. And so if I'm going to watch a movie, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to count the cost of that film, right? I'm not going to be able to watch all of this inside the time that I have. Maybe I don't start watching it, get 2/3 of the way through, get up to the climax, and then have to cut it off and do something else. Count the cost of what you're doing. Big or small, we always do this. Why don't we do it with Jesus? We know what the cost is. The cost is everything. The cost is yourself. The cost is your family and sometimes your relationships. The cost is everything about me. That's what it costs. Count the cost before you're going to do something like this. There's a reason Jesus indicates that broad is the way that leads to destruction, and narrow is the way that leads to life. Few people find that. It's hard to be a disciple. It takes a lot to be a disciple, but that's what Jesus commands. What are we doing to live up to that? If you don't hate yourself and your family, you can't be a disciple. If you don't kill yourself, you can't be a disciple. Not literally, physically, you understand that, but spiritually, you understand that, I hope. No one does things without counting the cost. If you're building a building, you'll count the cost. If you were a king going to war, you would count the cost. Why don't you do it with your spiritual life? So this is the cost. Verse 33, if you don't renounce all of your possessions, you can't be God's. If you don't give everything to God, right? Give your family to God. Give yourself to God. Give your stuff to God. These three major categories, right? Family and self-interest and all the belongings, the possessions that you have, these three are so integral to our lives and so important to all of us. God says you got to get rid of them, right? Get rid of them. You give them to God because God comes first before any of it. Get rid of all your stuff. Get rid of all your family. Get rid of yourself. And only then, once you have that true perspective on who God is, can you really appreciate the stuff that he's given you. Only then, when you have that true perspective on who God is, can you really appreciate the family he's provided you with. Only then, when you get rid of yourself, can you really appreciate the life that God has given you. Because God owns all of this. God made all people. That means he owns your life. God made all people, that means he owns your family's life. God made everything there is, that means he owns everything that you think you own. You're stewards of your lives. You're stewards of your families. You're stewards of your stuff. If you're not using that for God, what use is it? If you're letting those things get in the way of you and God, what use are they? Now, the command is very simple. The command is easy. Get rid of everything, and God comes first, and that means you have to lose everything so that you can be empty and God can fill you back up. That doesn't mean that you get rid of every earthly possession you own and start from scratch. It does mean that if earthly possessions are getting in the way of your faithful relationship with God, you need to cut those out. That doesn't mean that you leave your home and leave your wife and children and walk away from that. That does mean that if your wife and children are taking up all your time, maybe you need to reprioritize and push some other things out of the way, push them out of the way, so that you can spend one-on-one time alone with God. That doesn't mean that you go kill yourself physically. That does mean that sometimes you're going to do what God wants you to do instead of what you want to do. There are responsibilities you need to fulfill towards him. You're not going to want to do them. So what? It's not your life anymore. If you want to be God's, here's the cost. If you want to be Jesus's, here's the cost. It's an incredibly high cost. And it's only worth it if the reward is as great as we know it is. That is why there are plenty of warnings and reminders about heaven. That is why there are plenty of blessings that God pronounces upon his people. That's why there's all this good stuff that comes out of it. Right? That's why there's this good stuff that happens in the background. The thing is, to really appreciate all those good things, you have to give something up. And that something is called everything you have. Salt is good. Salt has a purpose, Jesus closes out with in verse 34. Salt has one job. But if it fails that job, guess what? Nobody likes the salt anymore. The salt isn't worth anything anymore if it fails its job. In like manner, humans have a purpose. We were made in the image of God. We were made to be like God. And that means self-sacrificial to the end. Like Jesus sacrificed everything he had to come here to earth, so also we have to sacrifice everything we have to go and be with God. Salt is good, so long as it sticks to its original intended purpose. If it loses that, if it loses its flavor, it becomes worthless and you get rid of it. Jesus calls us to work for God and all, and to do his things. If we lose that purpose, we've lost everything. So think about that when you're counting the cost and trying to understand who Jesus is. Thanks for listening. I hope you, I guess you probably didn't enjoy this, but I hope that it's good for you to at least consider. I will say one thing is this chapter is very rough. This section is very difficult to grapple with, but that might just be why it's followed up with Luke chapter 15, because Luke chapter 15 is a chapter all about the mercy and the grace of God. See, Jesus is a very demanding God, right? God is very demanding. He has high expectations for us to attain, but he's also willing to help us reach those expectations. And so as difficult as Luke 14 is, Luke 15 is going to paint a bright picture, a picture of God helping his people. And so if this makes you kind of struggle, if this makes you, you know, doubt and really wrestle with things that are going on, that's okay. That's good. That's what it's there for. That's why it's such strong language. And hopefully next week when we look at Luke 15, we'll kind of reestablish some of the good side of this as well. So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed and hope you benefited from some of these things. Continue to think about them and we'll pick up next week. Thanks for listening. God bless. And I'll see you next time.